The weather in Delphi, Indiana in February 2017 was unseasonably warm. The built-in snow day on Monday, February 13th, 2017 allowed for 13-year-old Abigail Williams and her best friend, 14-year-old Liberty German, to go hiking on the Monon High Bridge. The girls simply wanted to get outdoors and have the perfect snow day. Excitement begins to set in. But the girls failed to show up at the designated pickup time and place. Panic begins to set in. The entire community of Delphi shows up on the historic hiking trails of Indiana to search for the missing girls. Fear begins to set in. The next part of the story will take the small town of Delphi from being a town no one has ever heard of to becoming a town known for one of the nation's most heinous unsolved murders. Heartbreak begins to set in. This week on Forensic Tales, we cover the Delphi murders. Welcome to Forensic Tales. As always, I am your host, Courtney. Each Monday, we release a new episode that discusses real, bone-chilling true crime stories and how forensic science has been used in the case. Some cases have been solved through cutting-edge forensic techniques, while other cases have been left sitting on the shelf, collecting dust in the cold case division, just waiting to be solved by forensic science. If you guys love the show, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite shows. Also, if one episode a week is just not enough to satisfy your true crime obsession, you can now access bonus episodes and be the first one to listen to new episodes of Forensic Tales on our Patreon page at patreon.com/forensictales. Patreon is also where you can go to simply support the show. Every little bit helps, and I couldn't do this without you. Now, let's get to our story. Our case this week has gained the attention of the entire United States and quite possibly much further than that. The story has been featured on a number of true crime investigative shows, as well as some recent podcasts, including Scene of the Crime podcast and Down the Hill podcast. Both shows I personally subscribe to, and I binged both of them even before this whole quarantine began. So I highly recommend to you as my listeners that if you want to know more about this case and keep up to date with it, especially since we're all staying indoors lately. Now, the story is equally heartbreaking as it is shocking. I know I wanted to cover this story on the show because I deeply want this case to be solved, and I finally want to see the victims' families really receive the justice that they so deserve. And I want to see whoever is responsible for these murders to be held to answer for what they have done, not just to the victims and their families, but what they have done to the entire community of Delphi, Indiana. If you're like me, and I'm a Southern California girl myself, you have no idea where Delphi, Indiana is. Don't worry, you are not the only one here. So, Delphi is a really small city in Carroll County, Indiana. Simply overnight, Delphi became a city that gained everyone's attention for having one of the nation's most heinous and unsolved murders in recent years. Before the murders, Delphi was a city that offered their residents both a suburban and rural feeling. And with only a population of a little over 2,800 residents, it definitely has that small town America feel to it. Abigail Williams, who went by the nickname Abby, was a 13-year-old girl in the 8th grade at Delphi Community Middle School. Abby had a wide variety of interests, including playing with her saxophone in the school band, She also liked to play volleyball and she enjoyed swimming. Abby was really a girl who just enjoyed being outdoors in the fresh air. She rode ATVs with her family and liked to go camping. Just a fun and loving young girl. One of Abby's best friends was Liberty Rose Lynn German, who also had a nickname and went by Libby. Similar to Abby, Libby was also in the eighth grade at Delphi Community Middle School. And just like her friend Abby, Libby was also a member in the school's band and liked to play volleyball. Libby was a girl who loved to create things. She liked to paint and just do different arts and crafts. She was also super smart, who was busy preparing for the academic bowl in her high abilities class in school. Even though they didn't share all of the same interests, Abby and Libby were one of each other's best friends. On Sunday, February 12th, 2017, Abby spent the night at Libby's house. Now, normally this would have been a school night for the girls, but the following day on Monday was actually a built-in snow day for the entire school, which, again, California girl here, I've never experienced a snow day in my entire life. But I say built-in because it wasn't actually supposed to snow on Monday. In fact, it was actually a surprisingly warm day in Delphi for February. I think the weather was around a little over 60 degrees, which personally I wouldn't consider warm, but I guess for the city of Delphi, Indiana, they certainly would. But the school had already designated Monday the 13th as a snow day, so Libby and Abby had the entire day off from school. So Abby spent the night at Libby's house on Sunday night. And Libby actually lived with her grandma and grandpa at the time. And the two girls just had a ton of fun together that night. They just hung out with each other, they probably watched some movies, and the girls even spent some time with Libby's older sister, Kelsey. Now, the following afternoon, on Monday, February 13th, Libby's older sister, Kelsey, took Libby and Abby to go hiking near the Monon High Bridge Trail around 1:30 p.m. Again, because the weather was so unseasonably warm for Indiana in February, the girls really wanted to do something fun outdoors, and really, who could blame them? So Abby and Libby went hiking near the Monon High Bridge, which is basically an abandoned railroad bridge over Deer Creek. Now, I'm not personally familiar with this part of Indiana, but from everything I read while researching this case suggests that this is a pretty popular hiking trail for the people of Delphi. It isn't some random off-the-beaten-path type of place. And in fact, Libby and Abby and pretty much all of the kids in Delphi frequently visited the Monon High Bridge. Once Kelsey dropped Libby and Abby off at the trailhead, the plan was for Libby's dad, Derek, to pick the girls up later that afternoon. At 2:07 p.m., Libby posted a Snapchat photo from her cell phone. And it's a photo of Abby just walking across the Monon High Bridge. It just looks like a typical photo of a young teenage girl would post to Snapchat. The photo doesn't have any words or captions. It's just a photo. So Abby's wearing Converse shoes. She's got on blue jeans. And she just looks like your typical teenage girl who's out on a hike with one of her best friends. And I will post the Snapchat photo to my website, forensictales.com, so you guys can check it out for yourself because it is going to be important to the story. Now, it's also important to know that there is no one else who is seen in the photo and that there is absolutely no indication in the photo that the girls are in any type of trouble. Libby's father, Derek, shows up at the trailhead a little after 3 o'clock p.m. to pick Abby and Libby up as planned. Once he arrives at the trailhead, he calls Libby's cell phone at 3:11 p.m. to see where the girls are at. But he doesn't get any answer from Libby. 2 minutes later, he calls Libby's cell phone again, and he still gets no answer. Around 3:30 p.m., Libby's father, Derek, gets out of his car and starts heading down the path his daughter and Abby would have gone down just a few hours earlier. But he doesn't see any sign of the girls anywhere. After about 30 minutes of searching for Abby and Libby, Derek starts calling different family members to let them know that he's out there on the trail and he can't find the girls anywhere, and that by now they were really late to the pickup spot. By 4:15 p.m., a lot of people from Abby and Libby's families start showing up at the trail to help look for the missing girls. But again, Abby and Libby are nowhere to be found. Around 5:30 p.m. and the girls still haven't shown up, Abby and Libby are officially reported missing to the Carroll County Sheriff's Department. The report of the missing girls begins a really big community search. And within just a few minutes, really, an army of police officers arrived at the trail to help find the girls. And it wasn't just Carroll County police officers who were looking for them. Many family members of both girls were out there, and a ton of people from the Delphi community came out to help the search. Shortly into the search for missing Abby and Libby, an Amber Alert was issued that went across pretty much the entire state of Indiana. Even residents hours away from the city of Delphi received the Amber Alert for Abby and Libby, and within just a few short hours, it became an all-hands-on-deck search for the missing teenagers. Police knew that Libby had her cell phone with her because of the Snapchat photo she had posted just a few hours earlier. But sometime that evening, the exact time I'm not sure, but at some point, Libby's cell phone went dead, which really intensified the need to find the missing girls. The search for Abby and Libby was called off around midnight. And that's mostly because it must have been really dark out there on the trail that night. Remember, this is a hiking trail in the middle of nature, and it's not like there's any street lights to be able to see out there. And the search was also called off that night because it wasn't initially thought that Abby and Libby were victims of foul play. Police initially thought that maybe one of the girls got hurt out there on the hiking trail and that the other girl didn't want to leave her side. So the police were hopeful that they would find the girls safe and sound the following morning once they started up the search again. The search for Abby and Libby started again early the following morning on February 14th, Valentine's Day. And again, the search party for the girls was massive. The search party included a ton of volunteers from the community. They had canine officers out there, and even Abby and Libby's families were involved in the search. There were literally hundreds of people who showed up that day to find the girls, who they still believed would find them alive. Around 12 o'clock p.m. that afternoon, a searcher discovered the girls' bodies about a half mile east off the bridge down near the creek. Although the girls were discovered not too far from the bridge, the bodies were actually discovered on a 40,000 square foot private property of a local Delphi resident. Now, even to this day, very little is known about the condition of the bodies when they were discovered. The police have kept a lot of details about the crime scene very secret, and not much is known to the public. But what we do know by this point is that Abby and Libby were certainly victims of foul play. This was no accident. Abby and Libby had been murdered. At the autopsy, their bodies were officially identified as Abby Williams and Libby German, which didn't come as a surprise, but more just a confirmation. And just like where the bodies were found, there is very little known about the manner or causes of death. The police have not released any information about how the girls were killed, like if they were shot or if they were strangled. We really don't know if they were even sexually assaulted before their deaths or not. We don't really know much about anything regarding how these girls were killed. And I think there's a number of reasons why we have basically zero information about how they were killed. And that's because police tend to keep a lot of details about murders from the public because you don't want people making false confessions. And when you sit down with a potential suspect, you want to make sure that there's details about the murders that only the killer would know. And if you release details to the public, well, you pretty much lose that ability, which is something the Delphi and Indiana State Police are really trying to do here. And it's also possible that the police don't want to publicly share details about how Abby and Libby were killed because, frankly, they were just kids. There is enough information out there that suggests that whoever killed Abby and Libby may have left behind a signature near their bodies. So a signature is a personal mark or imprint that a killer leaves behind either on or near their victims. It's obviously not known what that signature was here, but reports out there suggest that Abby and Libby's killer left behind a possible signature at the crime scene. A signature can also tell us that this might not be the first time he's killed before, which in itself is pretty terrifying. Even though the public doesn't know much about how the girls were killed, many people believe, myself included, that the girls were likely killed very close to where their bodies were discovered. And that's for several reasons here. One is that, assuming that there's only one person responsible for the murders, it would have been pretty hard for one person to manage two victims at the same exact time. Also, Libby was around 200 pounds at the time she was killed, so it would have been pretty difficult for wherever the killer was is to kill the girls somewhere else and then drag both of their bodies down to the creek where they were ultimately discovered. So the next day, now this is February 15th, the Indiana State Police Department, who was assisting in the investigation, issued a still image of a man who was seen on the Monon High Bridge around the same time that Abby and Libby were. The photograph was actually a still photograph grabbed from Libby's cell phone. Now, at first, the Indiana State Police Department didn't call the person seen in the photograph a suspect in the murders or even a person of interest in the case. They simply just wanted to speak with this guy and find out from him if he saw or heard anything on the bridge that afternoon. It's pretty hard to make out all the details of the photograph because it is pretty grainy, but it appears to be a white male somewhere in his 20s, his 30s, maybe even his 40s. He's wearing blue jeans, a navy windbreaker style jacket, and to me, his hands look like they're in his pockets. And in the photo, he's seen crossing over the same bridge that Abby and Libby crossed over on their hike. But the release of this initial photograph didn't lead to any promising leads in the case. So a few days later, on February 22nd, a giant press conference was held about the investigation into Abby and Libby's killer. And this was a pretty big deal in the investigation because the police offered up an audio recording of the person they believe killed the girls. The audio that they share at the press conference is only a few seconds long, but it was audio retrieved from Libby's cell phone. And at the press conference, the police share that Libby used her cell phone to record this individual seen walking across the bridge. Libby is really regarded as being a hero because this young teenage girl had the wherewithal and presence of mind to record this individual basically in secret. Now, I'm not sure why Libby decided to videotape this individual on her phone. She must have had this sixth sense that something about this guy just didn't seem right. So it's pretty incredible and remarkable, really, that this teenage girl had the presence of mind to record this guy, who just didn't look right. Something that I don't even know that I would have been able to do in my 30s. Libby's pretty incredible. Now, it gives me the chills, and it makes me sick to my stomach to think that at this point, Libby must have known that something was really off about this guy, and she must have sensed some sort of fear to take out her cell phone and begin secretly recording him. All while knowing that something terrible was about to happen to her and her best friend. So the audio recording that was released to the public at this press conference is literally only a few seconds long, and it's likely a part of a longer recording. But for some reason, the Indiana State Police Department only decided to release a small part of it. Now, the audio clip that they release is only 4 words. And again, I'm not sure if it's a part of the same recording or if the words were spliced together from different sections of the video. But here it is. Here's the audio recording that was released. So, not much, right? I know it's a little hard to hear, but it's just a guy saying 4 words. Guys, down the hill. And again, I'm not sure if those words are spoken together or if it's guys and then later on, down the hill. To me, it sounds like they're from different parts of the video that Libby recorded. When he says guys, it sounds more familiar, like maybe around the time the guy approached Abby and Libby. And then the words down the hill sounds more like a command, like he's ordering the girls to do something down the hill. Whatever you make of the audio recording, it's obvious that whoever's voice is on the audio recording is Abby and Libby's killer. The hope is that someone will listen to the audio recording and recognize that man's voice. To me personally, the audio clip just might not be enough. Like, I don't even know if I heard my own fiancé's voice just for 4 words if I could recognize him or not. I mean, the guy in the recording does say the word guys in a pretty unique way. And it's possible that this individual uses the term guys a lot. So someone might recognize that. But I'm just not sure here. But regardless, this is all the police released to the public during this press conference. The Indiana State Police also report that additional evidence was retrieved from Libby's cell phone, but they really didn't want to go into too much detail besides the audio recording. And the reason why they didn't disclose what other evidence they got from her phone was, quote, not to compromise any future trial. So whatever else the police were able to recover from her cell phone is obviously a very important piece to the investigation. By the time of the press conference on February 22nd, the reward for any information in Abby and Libby's murders was now up to $41,000. The community of Delphi and the entire country were desperate to find Abby and Libby's killer. With the still photograph of the man seen walking across the bridge and the release of the audio recording, investigators were hopeful that they would receive the tip they needed to make an arrest in the case. But that didn't happen. A week would go by and no arrest in the case. Another week would go by, same thing. Of course, they were receiving a ton of tips about who people thought the man was in the audio recording. People were calling in their classmates, they were calling in their coworkers, their ex-boyfriends, and the police had to follow up on every single lead. And it wasn't just the Carroll County Sheriff's Department that was involved in the investigation. The Indiana State Police are involved, and even the FBI. Everyone from the local level up to the federal level are really working together to find this guy. Months go by in the investigation, and there is still no arrest in the case. And on July 17th, police hold another press conference on the case. At this second press conference, the police released a composite sketch of their suspect. And according to the police, the composite sketch was drawn based on eyewitness descriptions of a man seen walking the historic Delphi Trails the afternoon the girls were killed. The sketch that the police put together shows a man who appears to me a little overweight. He has some facial hair, like maybe a goatee, and he's wearing a hat and what looks like a baggy sweatshirt. So the Indiana police released the sketch again in hopes of getting any tips that would lead to an arrest. The police even consider the possibility that Abby and Libby's killer may be from the Delphi area, and in fact, they may still be local to the area. It's likely that the killer is from Delphi and is extremely familiar with the area, and that's because the trails that Abby and Libby went hiking on that day isn't a place that you would just stumble upon. The trail system in this area is pretty complex, especially for those who have never been out there before. So for someone to be out there on the trails that day and to have the confidence that they could get away with something like this tells the police that it's very likely that their suspect is from Delphi. Months go by in the investigation to find Abby and Libby's killer. According to Indiana State Police Sergeant Kim Riley, this hasn't stopped the investigation. Sergeant Riley insists that the case is not a cold case, and he says that there are between 6 and 8 officers in the multi-agency task force assigned to work Abby and Libby's case every single week. The investigation in Abby and Libby's case remained pretty quiet in the eyes of the public for nearly 2 years. The next press conference in the case wouldn't happen until April 19, 2019. In this 2019 press conference, the Indiana State Police Department announced that they are taking a new direction in the case. And with this new direction, they released a second composite sketch of their suspect. And this sketch is much different than the sketch that was released back in 2017. It's pretty much an entirely different person to me. The new description of the suspect describes a man between the ages of 18 and 40 years old, and he could appear much younger than he really is. A follow-up press conference was held a few days later on April 22, 2019. In the press conference, Superintendent Doug Carter revealed that they believed that the second sketch is a more accurate description of the suspect. Doug Carter also really emphasizes that these are just sketches, that they aren't actual photographs of the suspects, and really, the person may actually look like a combination of both the sketches. Now, in my opinion, the second sketch looks completely different from the first. I don't think they look like the same person at all, in fact. They look completely different in age, they look different in weight, and just the general facial expressions look different. I will be sure to post both of the sketches to the website so you guys can see for yourself. So the 2019 press conference also requested the public's help to identify the driver of a vehicle that was seen parked near the Monon High Bridge the day the girls were killed. This information is entirely new, and it wasn't something that was released back in 2017. According to Superintendent Doug Carter, the vehicle was parked at an old CPS-DCS building in Delphi near the Hoosier-Heartland Highway between the hours of noon and 5 p.m. on February 14, 2017. Not much information was released about the vehicle's make or model, just that the police wanted to speak to the driver. The Indiana State Police Department also released a short video recording of a white male dressed in blue jeans and a jacket walking across the railroad. Just like the audio clip released in 2017, the video is super short, like it's only a few seconds. And the video clip is another part of what Libby recorded on her cell phone right before the murders. Although the video clip is only a few seconds long, you can see the suspect take a few steps forward on the bridge. Now, I've watched the clip probably about 101 times, and it's obvious that the person isn't walking completely normal. Probably because he's seen crossing a really old bridge, and the wood boards are all different levels, so it's pretty clear that the man isn't walking the same way as if he would be walking down the street. And just like the photos, I will also post the video clip to our website so you guys can see what I'm talking about. And again, guys, I'm having the same issues with the video clip that I had with the 2017 audio clip of Down the Hill. The video that they release is literally a few seconds long, and it's only a couple frames. So I think it's so hard to try and recognize this man's walking style. Especially since it's clear that he's not walking normally, I think it's really hard to make out anything from this video. And again, unless you know someone with a very distinct walk, I don't think you'd recognize anything special from this video. It's not like what we saw in the case of Missy Beavers, a case that we covered a few episodes back on the show, where the suspect in that case had such a unique gait and walk. With this one, I'm just not so sure we see anything unique with this guy. But again, the police beg the public to come forward if they believe they know who this man is based on his walk in the video. Like I said, I'll be sure to post the video of the short clip to our website so you guys can definitely check it out. So by 2019, investigators still believe that their suspect is hiding in plain sight. And as I mentioned before, it's very likely that he's from the city of Delphi. Whether this person grew up in Delphi or they currently still live there. And there's been several persons of interest in the case over the years. Paul Etter came up on the police radar in July 2019 after they received a number of tips from the public about him. At the time, Paul Etter was actually wanted for the kidnapping and sexual assault of a 26-year-old woman just 1 month before. But the tips about Etter possibly being involved in Abby and Libby's murder have pretty much gone out the window because Etter committed suicide shortly after the police started tracking him down for the earlier kidnapping and rape. Paul Etter has never been called more than a person of interest in Abby and Libby's case, and with him being dead now, it's very unlikely that he will be pursued any further. Daniel Nations has also been named as a potential person of interest in the Delphi murders. Nations is a registered sex offender from Indiana, and he was actually arrested in September 2017, just a few months after the Delphi murders, for threatening people out on a Colorado hiking trail with a hatchet. Now, because Nations is a registered sex offender, doesn't mean he's involved in Abby and Libby's case. Remember, it's never been released to the public whether or not the girls were sexually assaulted before their murder. Regardless, by February 2018, Daniel Nations was no longer considered a possible suspect in the murder. There's been several other names mentioned as possible suspects in the Delphi murders, like Thomas Bruce, a former pastor, and Charles Eldridge, another sex offender from Indiana. But all these people have never been named more than a person of interest in the case. The FBI, Indiana State Police Department, or the Delphi Police have never officially named anyone a suspect in the murder, and to this day, there hasn't been a single arrest in the case. So it's a couple months into 2020, and it's now been a little over 3 years since Abby and Libby's murders. I think we're all stuck here wondering the same thing. Why hasn't this case been solved? We have photographs of the killer. We have videos of him. We even have the sound of his voice. But we still don't know who this guy is. It seems like this case should have been solved within a few days of the murder. And I think that's what a lot of people thought would happen, especially after the release of the initial photos and audio recordings. I think the public, the victims' families, and even myself included, thought that this was an open and shut case. I remember just thinking, okay, the Indiana police are going to catch this sicko. We know what he looks like. And in a few days, this guy will be behind bars. But day after day, and week after week, and now year after year, that hasn't been the case. Now, I know you're wondering, well, what about the forensic evidence in the case? Us Forensic Tales crew know that forensic science has the ability to solve just about any and every case, including one just like this. Well, not much is known to us about what forensic evidence the Indiana State Police Department have or don't have in the case. And you can go down the rabbit hole that is Reddit.com in this case. And some people say that the police have DNA from the crime scene. Some people say they don't. Some people say the killer left behind trace evidence. And some people say there was absolutely nothing left at the crime scene. Again, because the police have released so little about what was obtained at the crime scene, we really don't know what forensic evidence they have or don't have. In my opinion, I think it's likely that they do have some sort of trace or forensic evidence they just haven't disclosed. It's nearly impossible to commit a crime like this on two separate victims and not leave behind any trace evidence. This may include blood, sweat, fibers, maybe footprints, fingerprints, and the list could go on of potential evidence left behind. Especially if Abby and Libby were sexually assaulted before their murder. That raises the likelihood of valuable forensic evidence being left behind on the victims. The Indiana State Police and the FBI have felt like it's important to their investigation to keep the forensic evidence out of the public's eye, and by this point, I believe that it's probably for a very good reason. In my heart of hearts, I believe the Delphi murders will be solved. Whether it's through the forensic evidence or something else, I believe that whoever did this to Abby and Libby will be brought to justice. Abby and Libby and their families deserve that justice, and I believe someday they will get it. So, where does the case stand now in 2020? Even though it's been over 3 years since the murders, the police continue to receive tips every single day on the murders. And the police officers who are actively working the case follow up on each and every one of those tips. which isn't an easy task because to date, the case has received over 40,000 tips from the public. But as assured by the Indiana State Police, every tip is vetted and followed up on. Tips are placed into the FBI system known as Pyramid that stores information like names and motives so that the tips can be cross-referenced to other tips from all across the country. Now, what can you do to help solve the Delphi murders? Continue to share the audio recordings, the video, and the photographs of the man seen on the trails that day across social media. The more people who see the images, the better. Someone out there knows who this guy is. This guy is someone's son, possibly someone's father, maybe a coworker or a neighbor. Someone out there knows what this man did to Abby, Libby, their families, and the entire community of Delphi, Indiana. It's likely the suspect has told someone what he's done. And it's likely that he's talked about the murders to someone. And that's because we know this about perpetrators, like what we see in this type of case. They like to talk. They like to tell people what they did. As of now, the reward for any information leading to an arrest in the Delphi murders is up to $250,000. Tips can be sent into the Indiana State Police Department via email, online, or over the phone directly to the police. Of course, all tips are kept anonymous. I will post all tip information to ForensicTales.com. And I will continue to follow the Delphi murders and will update you guys whenever there's been an update in the case. Again, if you want to learn more about the murders of Abby and Libby, I highly recommend the Down the Hill podcast. It's a multiple episode podcast that dedicated to the facts of the case. Also, if you want to check out the sketches, the photos, the videos, and everything else from the case, they will all be posted on ForensicTales.com. I really believe that these murders will be solved, and I think it's just a matter of time before Abby and Libby's killer is finally brought to justice. Forensic Tales is a Rockefeller Audio production. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite podcast so you don't miss an episode of the show. If you love Forensic Tales, please leave us a rating with a review. Reviews really help the show and allow me to continue to produce the true crime content you love. Forensic Tales is a podcast made possible by our Patreon producers, Tony Ariola and Nicole Leasing. If you'd like to become a Patreon producer of the show, please check out our page or email me at Courtney@ForensicTales.com to find out how you can become involved. As always, thank you so much for listening to the show. Please join me next week. We release a new episode every Monday to satisfy your true crime obsession. And please stay safe out there. Until then, remember, not all stories have happy endings.